So you're going to make a little trip. Well, you climb into your air-conditioned car and you set out with your GPS and the interstate highway system. And it wasn't always that way, which is why we're delighted to be talking with Mary Jo Sontag. She is the co-author of a splendid little book called Write If You Live to Get There. Tell us what this is about.
Well, this book is a collection of 120 years of letters from my mother's family.
Mm-hmm.
In 1837, Lydia Davis and Joseph Meacham Phillip came from Vermont to Pennsylvania by oxcart with five children. And when they were here in western Pennsylvania, they had four more children. And between 1850 and 1868, seven of the nine children left Pennsylvania for the western frontier. And soon their letters were crisscrossing the country from Pennsylvania to Kansas, Illinois, Colorado, and the gold and silver mining towns of California.
How did you come across these? Did somebody have the foresight to save them, or did you have to go digging?
Well, fortunately, the family never did throw anything away. And when her mother died in 1962, my mother inherited a white wooden chest that was filled with the letters, photographs, and family memorabilia that dated back to 1842. And my mom put these letters on a shelf in the closet while she was raising her family. But in 1992, I had the chance to go on a business trip to Sacramento, and I took a side trip to Placerville where I found the family tombstones in the Union Cemetery. And when I came home, I told my mom if she'd get those letters out of the closet that I would take her to California. And so we spent the next year organizing those letters, and we took our first trip in May 1993. Putting these letters together was not an easy task because they were very fragile, and some were written in pen or pencil. They were often written, the answers to the letters were written on top of what they had written in the first place. So my mother took her magnifying glass and transcribed each of the letters onto a yellow legal pad, and then I typed them. There are more than 200 letters, so it was a 14-year labor of love.
Do you have a favorite?
I do have a favorite. This is a letter that was written by my great-grandmother. She was in California writing back to her children in 1907. And the letter begins, "We left this land of sleet and snow Friday, the 25th of October, and arrived at the land of sunshine and flowers on Tuesday, the 29th. We started in such a hurry, we forgot our candles and provisions, except for a few baked beans and some fried bear meat. In a strange place, in the dark, and trying to get something to eat, you can imagine how we looked. Bade would light a stick from the fire outside. By the time she got in, it would be out. I stumbled on a can of lard and told Bade we'd have light. I took a piece of cloth off an old apron I had on and tied a stone in it and put it in a pan of lard and set fire to it. Bade said the light of it would make an electric light ashamed of itself."
Huh.
And then she said, "Jim was driving a spring wagon with a box hitched on behind with a black pig in it weighing 150 pounds. Above that was a coop of chickens. On top of that was a can of lard, packed meat, carpets, rugs, and a little of everything. They put the calf in with the pig. We watched the calf and the pig. Sometimes the calf would be under the pig. Then we'd have to call Jim and he'd get out, fix them up." So I love this letter because it just gives such a rich, rich picture of what that trip might have been like.
Boy, I'll tell you.
It was pouring rain the whole time. This was a total distance of 60 miles. It took them 4 days to cover it because of the bad weather. And yet my great-grandmother said that they laughed so hard their sides ached, and it was one of the best trips she ever had.
Wow. Then there was Mary Phillips, who tells of living in East Moravia, Pennsylvania, walking out on her doorstep one morning and finding what?
She found a basket with a baby in it and a note from the mother that said she was trying to find work and she would come back for the baby. So Mary took in the baby and raised it as their own. His name was Willard Phillips. And when he was about 12 years old, he went ice skating, and he fell into the lake and drowned. His mother never did come back for him.
Oh, my. What would be the general theme of these letters? Would you say a chronicle of the this or that problem they faced? Are they uplifting and optimistic, or are they sort of nose to the grindstone, gritted out till we get there in their spirit?
What I enjoyed most was this was a family that was determined to stay connected. This is 120 years of letters from 1842 to 1962, and they wrote to each other across thousands of miles and across multiple generations. So I think that is very unique.
Well, it is. I was just wondering about the general tenor of it, optimism or determination. Was it a chore that they were undertaking out of necessity, or was it like a great adventure that they were looking forward to?
It was a great adventure. They left Vermont and left Pennsylvania not really having a clue about what they would find, but yet they were driven to go. They went to California looking for a better life, and I would say the spirit of the book is really quite uplifting because this was a family that really supported each other. They stuck together. They didn't gossip or complain about each other. They really tried to help each other. I think they're good models for us today because they dealt with what life handed them, and they did their best that they could.
Wow. Now, here's a story. They didn't all, of course, go by a wagon train or anything like that. There's the case of J.W.D. Phillips and Mehitable Jane Ball Phillips, who sailed to the gold fields of California, and they actually crossed the Isthmus of Panama before there was a canal. Tell us about that.
That's right. They took a boat called the Northern Light to California. They were married in Quincy, Illinois in December of 1851, and then they sailed on the Northern Light around Cape Horn, arriving in San Francisco in January 1852, so it took them about a month. It was a very hazardous trip because the ship caught on fire, and everybody on board thought that they were goners. They lined up, holding hands, ready to jump in the water. But finally, the fire was extinguished, and the ship was able to continue to San Francisco.
Wow.
That's not your average journey.
No, I would dare say not, although these days, I don't know, with cruise lines, maybe it's coming full circle. Interesting thing about Mehitable Jane, if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, she divorced her first husband. Why?
Because he was a Southern sympathizer in the Civil War, and she was a Yankee. And when she found that out, she said she would have none of that, and she divorced him.
Wow. Then there's J.W.D., by the way, built a resort known as Phillips Station at Lake Tahoe. And, of course, these days you would have all kinds of ways to brag about the accommodations at Lake Tahoe. He had a somewhat different way of bragging about his resort.
Well, one thing I think is interesting about that was he was looking for a place for his family, and he came across Echo Summit and looked down and saw this beautiful meadow. And he thought that that would be the place where he would want his family to live because it was not so harsh as in the higher elevations.
Mm-hmm.
And so he built that resort. When we think about a resort, we're thinking about golf courses and spas. But this was actually a tent camping resort, and he just loved the beauty of the place. Actually, Robert McNamara, when he was a child, he used to go there in the summertime.
Wow. I note the words that J.W.D. Phillips used his resort was known for its grand scenery and no rattlesnakes nor poisonous vines.
That's
so
right.
I guess those would be considered sort of minimum amenities these days. Who would be the wildest and craziest person, judging by these letters?
Well, I think... I don't know about the wild and craziest, but one of my favorites was Great Uncle Dan. He was a true pioneer. He was a miner, a rancher, a stagecoach driver, and a forest ranger. And although he said, "I ain't much of a writer," he's the bedrock of the family, and he kept everyone connected through his letters. He writes this letter to my grandmother, and he says, "I've come to the conclusion that you've forgotten your old Uncle Dan, but he hasn't forgotten you. I will enclose a piece of gold that I found last winter, so you'll have some little token to remember me by." He was really quite a charming guy, But he was everywhere.
Wow, it sounds like he was a jack of all trades, to be sure. And also, we should note that the book Write If You Live to Get There includes photographs as well. What sort of photographs? What are some of your favorite pictures?
Well, one of my favorite pictures is of Uncle Dan, because when you think of a pioneer, this picture just shows it. He's got a big white beard, white hair, it sticks out everywhere, old worn hat. He's sitting there with his tin cup. He just looks like my picture of a pioneer. There's another picture of the Phillips women, and they're sitting on the front porch. It's multiple generations, and they just look very stoic, these women. And I like that picture so much because when my mother and I took our trip in 1993 to California, we were in Calaveras Big Trees Park, and it was pouring rain there, so we went into the visitor center, and I saw this book called Women of Nevada, and when I opened it, there was a picture of Sierra Nevada Phillips and this picture of the women together, and that gave us a clue that someone was still alive because they donated the pictures.
It's quite a book. And Write If You Live to Get There is published by Word Association Publishers and co-authored by Mary Kay Sontag and our guest, Mary Jo Sontag.